Yes, and I really do appreciate you guys dropping by on this New Year's. I hope you had a great Christmas, and I hope you had a great New Year's. And I am sure that we are going to do some absolutely fantastic stuff this year in the realm of philosophy, because it is year 20. Year 20! That's right. It is. This show is almost old enough to drink in just about every American state. It's almost old enough to drink. And that is really, really something and a half. So I'm very pleased and excited about that. All right. So we are happy to take questions and comments. You can raise your hand and unmute. Yes. Vida, I have unmuted you. If you want to unmute yourself, you can be the first caller in the 20th year of Free Domain.
A question that was asked on another stream, another live stream. I have the question. I didn't ask this. I just heard it. I wasn't actually there for the live stream either. But it was, does trusting yourself involve giving up doing things out of obligation and waiting for desire? And what does trusting oneself and one's instincts entail? And that's the podcast number and the name is 5766, the CEO shooter. And the time step of that question is 1 hour, 5 minutes, and 34 seconds.
Right. And what's the question?
The question again is, does trusting yourself involve giving up doing things out of obligation and waiting for desire? And what does trusting oneself...
Is the beginning mistrusting yourself or distrusting yourself or something else? I didn't quite get the beginning of that sentence.
The beginning of the sentence is distrusting yourself.
Right. So distrusting yourself is waiting to feel pleasure rather than following obligation. Is that right? How he puts it, was it not my show? Are these my words?
No, this is someone commented on this on a live on one of your live streams that you do.
Okay, got it. Sorry.
Yeah, and so the way the person puts it is doing things out of obligation and waiting for desire.
I'm still not sure what your question is. Could you state it as a philosophical question?
I'll put it this way. I'm trying to understand how to trust myself, and I'm kind of like I'm having the same issue kind of with this guy where I'm kind of stuck between obligation and desire, as well as I just don't really know. I'm very bad at navigating between obligation and desire. I'm like caught in between.
Okay, give me, that's great. I appreciate that. Thank you. Can you give me a concrete, specific example to make sure I'm aiming my answer in the right direction?
I can't think of one in particular. I can think of like how the experience feels like. I have an experience. Like,
if you're struggling with it, it's got to show up in your life somewhere, right? So what you got?
Well,
it shows up in all of our lives. Every single one of us has this challenge. So what's yours?
Well, like preparing for this, this question and speaking to you, like for me, like my heart's pumping, but in a manner that like I'm shaking. And I understand there is supposed to be some anxiety, but to me, it just feels disproportional. Like you're asking me these questions and my mind is going blank. So that would be an example. I think that's a good example.
Okay, so obligation and desire, how is that showing up? Because what you're sounds like, mild anxiety or nervousness or whatever it is, which is fine. I mean, that's you're in a new situation, right? So I've been doing this kind of philosophical stuff for like over 40 years, and you are doing this for the first time, right? So of course you're going to be more nervous, right? That makes total sense. But how does this, the desire is what, and the obligation is what? Like, what is the conflict here?
Let's see. I'm still thinking.
Do you have an issue in your life, like making money or maybe eating well or going to the gym or something where you know that there's an obligation that you could have relative to health or wealth, but you just don't want to do it, or you wait for the desire to kick in or something like that?
For example, I've been out of work and like I've been using my savings, and so getting another job has been very difficult for me.
And why do you think getting another job has been difficult?
Well, my other job beforehand, I was working for my father, so it was something that was just given to me. I didn't really want it, but that's a story for another time. So I haven't really been in the real world. I've just been stuck in my father's orbit. And that's
okay.
Partly why it's difficult.
And how old are you?
I'm 29.
And how long did you work for your father?
I'm sorry, I think you cut out there.
Sure. How long did you work for your father for?
I started when I was 18 and it ended when I was 20, let's say 28. So for almost 11 years.
Okay.
Or 9 years.
And why did you stop working for your father?
I stopped because my dad took advantage of me, and it was and I didn't like the work, and it was a very bad work environment. Like, people were passive aggressive towards each other, and worse with me because my father was the owner. So like, all the things they didn't want to say, they wanted to say to my father, they would just say to me, or be passive aggressive towards me. And that's just to name a few bad things.
Okay, and how long have you been listening to what I do?
Many years.
Okay. And when did you first begin to suspect that it was not a productive or positive thing to be working for your father?
From the beginning.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I never wanted to work for my father, but I got forced into it. When I realized it was a really bad thing, it was maybe
Hang on. Okay, so this is a narrative, and the new year is going to be no narratives. So when you say to me, I never wanted to work for my father, that's impossible, unless you were kidnapped and sent down the salt mines. No, let me talk. So unless you were kidnapped and sent down to the salt mines of Aldebaran, there has to be a part of you that wanted to work for your father. So if I say, I never wanted to see my mother, then the question is, well, given that I wasn't forced at gunpoint to, why did I see my mother? So there was a part of me that did want to see my mother, and then there was a part of me that didn't. So if you say, I never wanted to work for my father, well, it's pretty easy to not work for your father. You just don't work for your father. Again, unless he's some Saudi prince who's got you locked in a salt mine in Kessel or something. So
I have a practical reason.
I'm sorry?
I have a practical reason. And that was, I didn't have a high school diploma at the time because I dropped out. And my father said, you either work for me or I'll kick you out. And it was a whole family. It was very tense. My grandmother, who lived in the same house as I did, and she rented her room. She told me, out of kindness, you can stay in my room. You don't have to, you don't have to worry. So I mean, you're right. That's not by gunpoint. Absolutely. But I think that encompasses the definition of being forced into
Hang on. So what you're saying is that your choices were limited because you dropped out of high school.
Yes, maybe that isn't being forced, and then you would be right.
Okay, did you choose to drop out of high school?
Fundamentally, yes, but at the time, if I was getting like very depressed and having major anxiety, and I was just skipping out of school, and I was a good student beforehand. And so eventually I just stopped going, and I was over 18. And so even though the school could threaten me, I was an adult, so I wasn't obligated anymore to go to school. And so, with some assistance, from my mother, I didn't finish school.
Sorry, there's a lot in there I'm trying to unpack here. So when you said I was a good student before what?
I would say before my senior year. My senior year, a lot of things happened.
I'm sorry about not knowing the lingo. Senior year, does that mean grade 12?
Yes. I'm from the United States. That would be grade 12, the last year of high school.
Okay. So for some portion of the last year of high school, you were unhappy. You said depressed, anxious. Is that right?
Yes.
And before that, you were a good student.
Yeah.
Okay. And what happened?
A lot of things. Actually, now that we're talking about it, I haven't thought about it in a long time. I was a really good athlete as well. I was a top cross country athlete.
Hey, I did cross country in high school too. That is a muddy, dirty, ugly business, man. I'll tell you. Well, you know, I don't have to tell you because I know.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I did a run in, I think it was grade 12. The mud was so bad that half the kids couldn't complete the race. They just had to go back and look for their shoes in the mud. It was quite something. But anyway, go on.
I had a similar experience, not personally with myself, but with one of my teammates, where he lost his shoe and he didn't go back. He just kept going.
He didn't go back. Nice. That's commitment.
Oh no, you don't go back. Yeah. Especially if you're vying for the top spot, it's like you work with it. You just manage.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you're a good athlete, good student, and what happened?
Yeah. So that's kind of. Would you ask me some questions? I know that sounds strange, because it's.
Well, okay. So let me ask you this: in grades 2 through 11, you were a good student. You know, at some point you were a good athlete. So you were healthy, you were active, you're out there getting the good sun and the cardio, and legs are pumping, arms are flying, and all kinds of good stuff, right? And so,
right.
At some point, you moved into a position or a situation of anxiety and work avoidance. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so was that a quick transition or a slow transition? In other words, did you just wake up one day saying, man, I hate this freaking place. I'll chew my own arm off like a wolf at a trap to get out. Or did you just wake up a little less motivated each day?
The second. I would say over a 6-month period, starting at the beginning of summer till the end of the year, it was just gradually I started feeling worse. I didn't even consider it being depressed at the time, but now that I look back on it, I was feeling more and more depressed. And my anxiety was unbearable. Like, I never skipped school. And I remember at the end of that year, the year itself, not the school year, I remember facing this like daunting anxiety where I'm like, I don't want to go to school anymore.
Right. Okay.
And my grades were so bad that I...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just want to say my grades later on, a couple months later, my grades were so bad that I got kicked out of track and field, which is with my school, you both do cross country and track and field. And that just made things worse.
Okay. And this... So the beginning of the year is September, right? And then the end of the year is June?
Yes, June.
Okay, so September, you're okay. When does it start to kick in that things are bad?
December.
So then December through the end of winter, early spring, and then through to early summer, you're just getting worse and worse. And what month was it roughly when you dropped out?
So I was kicked out. I wasn't dropped out because my grades were really bad. They kicked me out.
Fine. Sorry, I got that wrong. What month was it roughly that you were kicked out?
Sorry, Steph, you cut out there. At least I think it's on my end.
I thought you had dropped. We got two things going on here. One is that you were kicked out of track and field or cross country running, and the other is you dropped out of school. So which one are we talking about? Kicked out or dropped out?
I was just mentioning about my internet connection just a moment ago, and I'm trying to fix it. So sorry.
All right. Yeah, let me know when you can hear me. All right. Well, I'm just going to talk then, because I think I actually do have enough information to lead this person, and he's got his internet issues. And we have our internet issues. I may be on both sides. I'm not sure. But it's not so much towards the end of high school. Let's just say, obviously, this is the more concrete example. It's not so much that you're anxious about high school. It's that you're anxious about the end of high school. I mean, if you are a pilot and you're trying to take off and you're not sure you have enough runway, you're not anxious about the runway, you're anxious about the end of the runway. Now, if your parents have not prepared you for the world as a whole, if they have, in fact, interfered with your development of the world as a whole,
I'm back. I don't want to interrupt.
No, that's fine. So if your parents have not prepared you for adulthood, then the end of high school is going to be absolutely horrible. Because it's like if you haven't studied for a test and the test is incredibly important, then the test is incredibly stressful. In fact, it is the anticipation of the stress of being unprepared for a test that is a major reason as to why we prepare for tests. Why we SWAT or study or matriculate or however you want to phrase it, right?
That totally applies to my situation.
Yeah, and now, so it's one thing if you're unprepared for the test. In other words, if your parents have just kind of resolutely ignored or neglected you, that's one thing. If, on the other hand, your parents have actively sabotaged your capacity to have a functional adulthood, that's even worse. Now, you're not just unprepared for the test, but people have beaten you up while you tried to study, and now you're averse to the whole thing, and you just feel like wretched and vomitous when it comes to approaching the test. In other words, you're not just unprepared, you've been brutalized into being averse to the test. And so,
yeah, that was the amount of experience.
Yeah, and the amount of parental sabotage that goes on when parents have dysfunctional marriages, in particular dysfunctional relationships. Do you have siblings?
I have half siblings.
Half siblings. And where are you in the birth order? I assume older.
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest. Okay, right. So, what kind of age gap is there between you and your half siblings?
The first one is 6 years, and the other two are, 17 and 19, something like that.
17 and 19 years?
Yes. One, I remember my mother had the child that was 6 years. And then my father had the two others, which are the 17, 19 year difference.
Wow. Okay. Got it. So you're the only, you only have half siblings, right?
I only have half siblings.
Okay, got it. So, yeah, if the parents are dysfunctional, they will often cripple the children so that the children don't go off and leave them behind. If your father is really difficult to work with, he would certainly have an incentive to cripple your development from a social and economic and romantic standpoint so that you'll be stuck working with him, so to speak. He gets cut free labor.
Correct.
Yeah, he gets free labor or cheap labor or at least reliable labor by kind of sabotaging you. So what did your parents do when you began to get really anxious about high school?
My father, he ignored me. And I remember in December of that year when that was that point that I was talking about where I started missing school and such. I I went to him to talk about what was going on. And I remember because he, like I said, he owns his own business. It's a restaurant. And he would just spend all the time he could talking to his customers while I was waiting for him outside of the restaurant. I just remember sitting there for hours and for an hour at times. And I went to him like multiple times to say, well, to have someone to talk to. Oh, and
okay, got it.
My mother, she'd moved out of state, and so I didn't speak to her too much until when I wanted to leave school. That was kind of more when we started talking again.
Right. Okay. So your parents weren't helpful in your school anxiety, right?
They weren't helpful with that, and I would say they were. At least I thought this way. They were never helpful with pretty much anything throughout my childhood.
Okay. What about guidance counselors or anybody else, school nurse or anyone else who you might be, have been able to talk to about your anxiety? Go ahead.
I had a coach, my cross country and track coach. I could talk to him a little bit, but in general, I was very closed off. At that time, very suspicious, and I was really bad at even communicating at the time, like worse than I am now. And so, like talking, having conversations with other people, especially if I was not too familiar with them, was like, I would say it was almost impossible.
Almost impossible is an oxymoron. It's a contradiction. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
If something's impossible, it's impossible. If it's almost impossible, it's possible, right? So almost impossible is a way of saying, well, I can't claim I had no free will, but I'm going to pretend I had no free will.
Right. Yeah, my bad. And I would say it was very, very difficult. Like it was.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I get it. So it was very hard. And listen, I obviously want to say how much I sympathize with your situation as a teenager. I really sympathize, and I'm sorry. I'm really, obviously, hugely sorry, and feel very sympathetic that you didn't get any good coaching or feedback. I mean, my daughter is, she just recently turned 16 last month, and of course, you know, we've talked a lot about life and moving forward, and she's, you know, getting close to adulthood, and all that kind of stuff. So she needs, you know, that kind of feedback, which is a different kind of thing than goes on when you're younger. It's sort of preparing your kids for adulthood. And it's a big job and it's a fun job, but it's very important. And I'm sorry that you didn't get that for sure. And of course, what happened to you as a child is not your responsibility, but we're talking cusp of adulthood stuff. Now, you said that you were past 18. Did you lose a year or I'm sorry if I don't know. When I was a kid, there was still grade 13. And I worked night and day to get out of school as early as I could. So I'm not sure, did you lose a grade or was there some reason you were in high school into adulthood?
No, at least here in California, in the United States, people tend to finish high school either at 18, where like the last few months of the high school, I turned 18 at the beginning. It's not too uncommon, but I feel like I was kind of lucky in that way, but it's
okay. So
it's
that's, not unusual. No, you didn't lose a year, just it was the accident of birthdays or whatever it is that had you graduating as an adult.
Exactly.
Okay, so you did not get help from anybody. You couldn't get it from your parents, and you didn't really get it from your coach, and you didn't talk to anyone else. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, because, and again, I understand it was really...
That's correct.
It was really hard. So then you didn't graduate and your father said, come work for me or I'm kicking you out, right?
That's correct. The way I was able to leave is my mom, like I mentioned before, she lived out of state. So she bought me a ticket and then told the school that I'm transferring to a school nearby her, and so they stopped threatening me with having the police come and take me to school every day.
Now, that wasn't true. Is that right?
Well, they certainly made that threat.
Sorry. It wasn't true. I'm sure it's true that they made that threat, but it wasn't true that your mother was transferring you to another school.
She filed the paperwork, but I suppose it wasn't true.
You suppose it wasn't true? Did you go to another school?
No, I didn't go to another school when I arrived.
Okay, so your mother lied for you to have you escape consequences, right?
Yes.
That's not very manly. And I say this as the son of a single mother who's gone through my whole share of emasculating things, but have mommy lie to the school so you don't have to finish high school is not the most noble thing. I mean, obviously, in hindsight, it wasn't very good for you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't going to graduate anyways. I had failed the first semester and failed the second semester. And they were like, oh, you're going to stay for summer school. And I was just like, no, I'm not. And I could have just said, hey, I'm 18. I'm signing myself out of high school. But my mom had concocted this plan. And I was just like, fuck it. I'm just going to do that. Like, I needed to get out. I couldn't go back. I did go to the meeting that dictated the end of my high school career, which that was terrifying. And,
What was terrifying?
Oh, they had a meeting with the principal, the assistant principal, as well as all my teachers, and my coach as well was there to talk about how I'm failing high school and that I intend to leave. I don't know what the normal thing is, but that's what happened to me.
Okay, got it. And you were failing because you just weren't showing up to classes and you weren't doing the work, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So you had a choice, and this is where discipline comes in. So discipline is not anti-hedonism, it's just hedonism in a longer time frame. So for instance, I want to be strong and healthy when I get old. I've seen, and most people have seen at some point in their life, they have seen the sickly, ghoul-like, crypt-keeper old people tottering around, or, you know, the giant assed people wheeling around in their little battle tanks in Walmart or stuff like that, right? Now, that right. To me both simultaneously sucks chunks and blows lard, and I just don't want to live like that. So I'm hedonistic in that I want to have, as much as I'm able to, a sort of strong, robust, and healthy old age. Now, I'm not way off from 60, and I can still sprint, I can still work out, I can still play tennis, and I can hike all day. Like, I'm, you know, doing all right. I'm doing all right. Now, that's just hedonism in a longer time frame. So when it comes to discipline, people think that hedonism or pleasure and discipline are opposites. No, not at all. There's an old saying among the ladies who lunch, the rich, wealthy socialites. They say, nothing tastes as good as thin feels. Or they say, you know, once on the lips, forever on the hips. When it comes to a dessert, you get to taste it once, but then it stays on your ass forever, right? So
right.
Discipline in a rational context is just hedonism pushed out into the future, right? Too far with that. So hedonism is when you take your pleasures now at the expense of pleasures later, and discipline is when you get pleasures later at the expense of pleasures now.
Got it. Thank you.
That's all it is. So they're both pleasure-based mindsets. Hedonism is, I'll take my pleasure now, right? And discipline is, I'll take my pleasures later.
Right.
So it's not, now that there's some people who get, they defer their pleasures too long, right? In other words, they die with $10 million in the bank and never having done anything cool or bought anything cool or gone on any vacation or anything like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that to me is extending your discipline a little too far. You can have too much discipline, and this can result in an eating disorder where you have anorexia nervosa or something like that, where, you know, like it's just kind of out of whack, right? So you can have too little discipline, you can have too much discipline. It's an Aristotelian mean. You can defer gratification all the time, forever and ever, and that's called being an ascetic. It's like a monk who's like, well, I'll beat myself with ropes and starve myself, but I'll get the kingdom of heaven later. Well, I guess just as another kind of theological hedonism, right? So, right. So discipline is not anti-pleasure, at least rational discipline is not at all anti-pleasure. Discipline is, I want a lot of pleasure. I want pleasure. Like for me, the time I spend exercising, which I don't particularly enjoy. I'm not like some, I guess some guys like moving heavy metal in a dark room. I'm not that guy. So I don't really enjoy exercise, but I enjoy the effects of exercise more than I dislike exercising. So when it comes right. to seeking pleasure, discipline is about seeking pleasure. It's just in a different time frame than what you might be used to, if that makes sense. Now, the question then is, what was happening in your life where you're kind of looking back over 10 years, and I think if I understand this correctly, you're sort of looking back over 10 years and you're saying, I wish I had made different decisions. Is that right?
Would you repeat that again? I'm sorry.
When you look back over the last 10 years, do you wish you had made different decisions?
In the beginning, I would say in the beginning, the last three, like since I've found your show, let's say the last past 5 years, I'm not too dissatisfied. But the first, like from 18 to 24, I have many regrets, and I have less regrets after 24 to present.
Okay, that's great to hear. All right, so let's just do a quick inventory then, right? So,
right.
Do you have some reasonable measure of financial stability and security?
Not yet.
Okay. Do you have a sustained romantic relationship?
I have one, and I haven't had one since.
Well, no, then you don't have one now, right?
I don't have one now. That's correct.
Okay. What is the longest romantic relationship that you've had?
I believe two years and a half.
And when did that end?
When I was 23. It could have been 22, but let's say 23.
Okay, so that's a long-ass time ago, right?
Yes.
So you've been single for over half a decade.
Correct.
Okay. You don't have a meaningful career or a job, right?
That's correct.
Okay. What about a circle of good friends who can help encourage you to excellence?
I don't have any good friends.
Okay, so you've got no financial stability. You've got no girlfriend or prospect thereof. No wife, no kids, no good friendships, right? No savings. So things aren't going particularly well, right?
No, things are going very badly.
Okay, so how can you have fewer regrets when things are going worse?
Well, because I'm aware of these things. Like beforehand, it was just this ball of emotions. And I had resigned myself. I just thought I was screwed, and I believed in family obligations, and thanks to I don't. And so I was in a very dark place, in my mid 20s. And then having learned a lot of the philosophical points you've made about, you know, I don't have to, be joined to the hip by my family of origin. It helped me to slowly, it gave me that necessary relief to keep going.
Okay, and what is the status of your relationship with your family of origin at the moment?
Well, I'm still living with some of them, but at least with my father, which I spent the most time in my 20s with, I'm away from him now, and that was a very important step for me.
All right, and I'm sorry to hear that there's distance between you and your father, but it sounds like a decision I can completely understand. So who were you living with?
My grandmother, from my mother's side.
And this is on your mother's side. Okay, got it. Okay, and so what is the issue or the question that I can most help you with at the moment?
I mean, now that we've done an inventory, I have this like under what do they call it? I see why I have this like persistent anxiety. But I'm not really sure what to ask.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you view your father as a hardworking man?
I do.
Okay. Do you view him as I don't mean self-disciplined, but in terms of his business work, do you view him as disciplined? Does he work hard even when he doesn't particularly want to?
Yes, that's kind of difficult because he's more of a workaholic. And so I'm more efficient than he is.
No, but that's being disciplined in a way, right? I mean, he's still working hard, right? So here's one of the challenges that may be occurring for you. And if it doesn't, we can drop it. But one of the challenges that may be occurring to you is it's the ceding of virtue to enemy territory. It's a ceding of essential territory to the enemy, right, so to speak. So if your father is disciplined and hardworking and you don't like your father, what they used to call throwing the baby out with the bathwater, oh, the bathwater's dirty, we're going to throw it out, and the baby's in it, so we'll throw the baby out too. No, you throw out the bathwater and you keep the baby, right? You flush your poop, but you don't flush the toilet away as well, right?
Right.
So if you look at your father, right, and you say, oh, man, so that's what a hardworking, disciplined guy looks like. So hard work and discipline makes you an asshole.
Yeah.
Right? Like if your father was some drill instructor, right? You'd be like, damn, getting up early and exercising makes you into an asshole. So then what you say is, well, I don't want to be an asshole. So I better not work hard and be disciplined because look what that does to you. I'll give you an example from my own life. So my mother is very creative. I inherited some of my rational faculties from my father and some of my creative faculties from my mother. My mother is very creative. Now, my mother also is violent and crazed. Now, if I were to say, man, look what creativity does to you, man. It makes you unhinged and aggressive. Well, what would happen? Well, I would not want to express any creativity because it would be like the mark of the beast or something like that.
Right.
And my father was rational, but cold. And if I were to say, oh my gosh, well, if you're rational, you just become like Spock. You become really awkward and, I don't know, half autistic and weird, and you can't connect with people and so on, right? You kind of disappear up your own ass. Then I would say, well, I can't be overly rational because that makes you cold and weird, like Dr. Spock or Mr. Spock from Star Trek, right? So if I were to look at my mother and say, well, she owns the definition of creativity. I look up the word creativity, and there's my mother. If I would look up the word rationality, there's my father. Well, I don't want to be like my mother, and I don't want to be like my father. But if they own the definitions of reason and creativity, I'm screwed because I've given them the definitions. So I can't be those things because I don't want to be like them. Does that make sense?
It does.
So discipline, hard work, and so on, if you associate the toxic elements or your father's personality as being bound up in these traits, then you are going to veer away from these traits, and your life will not succeed. Because in order to succeed in life, guess what? You need to be disciplined and hardworking, right?
Right.
There's nobody who succeeds who's not disciplined and hardworking.
Well, also, it sounds like to me that now that you mentioned that, I did throw out the baby with the bathwater, in particular with what is a job? How is it supposed to be? What's the work environment? What are the responsibilities? Because I was given a lot of responsibilities and no authority to do anything. So, you know, I would be treated very poorly by some of my father's workers. And I had no authority to be like, you know what, if you talk to me like that again, I'm going to speak to my father and I'm going to have you fired. My father had kept all these workers for decades and decades, in which he, well, often in situations, he would side with the worker instead with me, even if I was treated badly. And he would get annoyed with me. Oh, you're just causing trouble. And it's like, it was one of those situations where I was doing the right thing, or I was looking out for my own interests, like with tips, for example, because I worked at a restaurant. And I was being, my dad would be very harsh with me about that. No, stop rocking the boat. Just, I'll compensate you. Give them all the tips. And it's like, no, like I earned these two and that old deal doesn't matter anymore. I'm not a kid anymore. That I deserve this now and I've earned it and I want it. And so I think with me, my dad owned the definition of what is a work environment. I'm not sure if that is compatible with your saying, but that in particular, you know, that sparked a thought in my mind.
Okay. So people treated you badly in the restaurant, right?
Yes.
And your solution was to run to dad?
No.
That's what you said, though. Hang on. Don't gaslight me, bro. That's what you said. You said people would treat me badly and I had no authority over them and I couldn't go to my father and say, I'm going to get you fired or something like that, right?
Well, that wasn't an option at all. Like I didn't have that.
No, but it shouldn't be an option. Running to daddy to deal with coworkers is like running to mommy to deal with the school board.
Well, at least I didn't mean it in that manner. I meant it as in like my father would rather fire me than fire them, even if they were in the wrong.
It's not your father's job to make people treat you well.
No, I'm not talking about treating well. I'm saying they were abusive towards me.
It's not your father's job to prevent people from abusing you, not when you become an adult.
I'm talking about as a manager of his restaurant and employees, one employee harassing the other employee.
Listen, bro, I worked in restaurants for many years.
I did too.
Okay. So if you want to tell me that the only way you can get treated with respect is to have your father threaten to people to get fired, you're kind of doomed.
No, I didn't.
Daddy ain't going to be around. Daddy is not going to be around.
I didn't
do that for you your whole life. You have to listen. Do you want to keep talking while I'm talking? You want to try that?
I'm sorry.
Let me finish. Right, let me finish. Then I could be wrong, but let me finish. It's really kind of annoying to try and talk with people talking in your ear. All right. Is it your father's job to make sure for the rest of your life that you're treated with respect?
No.
Whose job is it to ensure that you're treated with respect?
It's my own job.
It is your own job. It is your own job. The fact that you want to run to daddy to deal with aggressive or abusive coworkers is probably one of the reasons why you were treated with disrespect. And I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying that that's the causality. I mean, there are lots of people in this world who are treated with respect even when they don't have direct authority. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, that is a fair statement.
I mean, I don't have any authority over listeners. I hope that we treat each other with mutual respect. I don't have any authority over my wife. I don't have any direct authority over my daughter, but, you know, or my friends, right? But we treat each other with respect, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense.
Okay. So the challenge is, and I understand why, because when you were a kid, it was your father's job to make sure you were treated with respect and to treat you with respect. But if your father treats you like shit, there's no way your coworkers are going to treat you well.
Well, these coworkers I grew up with, like I would frequent the restaurant when I was a kid. I grew up with most of them and they treated me badly. I mean, my father's assistant and manager, I was terrified of him. I thought Even once you try to assault me.
Sorry, I don't feel like we're having a conversation. Did you hear what I said?
I think you cut out. I'm sorry. And I'm being honest. I think you cut out, and that's why I didn't hear it.
Okay, but if you didn't hear it, then tell me. Okay, so if your father treats you like crap, it's very likely your coworkers will treat you like crap.
Yeah, that's correct.
Because if your father is an abuser, let's say, if your father is abusive, then healthy people will not want to work with him.
That's correct.
So he's not going to have healthy people around. He's an abuser. He's going to hire abusers, and abusers are going to prey upon you.
Yeah.
So your father would not have, as an abuser himself and somebody who abused you, your father would not have interfered with other people abusing you. It's inevitable that he would fail to protect you and, in fact, put you in a situation of abuse. Does that make sense?
It does. And that's what happened. Okay.
It is your job to make sure that you are treated with respect.
Yeah.
And I say this because you're going to go and try and get a new job, right?
Yes.
Okay. And it is not anybody else's job to treat you with respect. It is your job to do your best to make sure you're treated with respect. Now, there are some people who are going to be assholes no matter what, and you just avoid those people. There are some people who are going to treat you well because of their own inner integrity, and you don't have to worry about those people. Right? It's like in business, there are some people who are going to cheat you no matter what. There are some people who are going to be honorable no matter what. It's the people in the middle that virtue is for. Because virtue will simply tell you to avoid the people who just are assholes. And virtue will tell you, you don't really need to focus your attention on honorable people, right?
Right.
I don't wake up every morning saying, gee, I hope my wife doesn't divorce me and cheat on me and, you know, steal the silverware, right?
Right. Yeah.
So virtue is for the people in the middle. Virtue is for the people who, if encouraged, will do the right thing, but don't have their own absolute internal integrity.
Yeah, they go where the wind flows.
And that's most of the people. Most of the people in the world. It's a bell curve, right? Most of the people are in the middle. And they will, sadly, I wish it wasn't this way, and I'm certainly working my ass off to try and make it not this way, but most people will follow your cues. Most people will not say, I should treat this person with respect because he's a fellow human being who's had his own trials and tribulations and I would want to be treated that way and blah, blah. Most people don't do that. And most people aren't just automatic assholes, right?
Right.
Most people will judge you how? They don't have any internal moral standard and they're not complete sociopaths. Most people will judge you how?
On your own standards.
Yeah, by how you judge yourself.
Exactly.
Most people will judge you by how you judge yourself. And most people respond to positive and negative stimuli, not to their conscience or their morality.
I see.
So you have to be willing to apply positive rewards and negative stimuli in order to be treated with respect by most people.
Right.
Now, because your father applied negative stimuli, you probably associate that with being an asshole, but it's not.
Yeah, that's right.
So for instance, a good manager, like Elon Musk, obviously is a great manager, and he says, look, we don't have toxic people at Tesla. People don't pull their weight. People are difficult. We just fire them. So he obviously pays people well, and then he fires people who perform badly or who are difficult. So that's positive and negative stimuli.
Right.
Everything that works in your life is delivered by people who are willing to apply positive and negative stimuli. Because if they're not willing to apply positive and negative stimuli, stuff doesn't get made. The electricity doesn't work. The internet doesn't work, right? Computers don't work.
That's
everything
what happened
becomes Soviet crap. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to say that's what happened in my father's restaurant. I started doing more and more work, and The restaurant's closed now, but you're totally right.
Right. So in order to be treated with respect, you have to be able to apply positive and negative stimuli. And so when I was in my sort of heyday on social media, I applied positive and negative stimuli. I mean, I did it within the bounds of honor and so on, but, you know, people who made good arguments, I would give them praise. People who made bad arguments, I would criticize. Huh. And sometimes I would make fun of them, right?
Right.
And sometimes I would mock them, and sometimes I would be sarcastic, right? So that's positive and negative stimuli. And that's just the reality of the world that we live in, that most people, and of course school, and to some degree religion has to do with this, positive and negative stimuli. Religion, for instance, does not view people as motivated by virtue, which is why there's heaven as the positive stimuli and hell as the negative stimuli. Most people don't have an internal work ethic, and so they have to be offered raises or being threatened with being fired. Now, the people you know who are operating beyond a positive and negative stimuli are those with FU money, right? So Elon Musk clearly is not, he's not working because he's got bills to pay, right? I mean, the guy lives on people's couches and is worth hundreds of billions of dollars, right?
Right, right.
So a movie star, you know, there are a couple of movie stars. I think Jim Carrey just did Sonic the Hedgehog 3 because he says he needs some money. And Marlon Brando famously did roles in order to make money and really didn't give a shit about his art. But most movie stars who are worth a lot of money, like Tom Cruise is worth, what, like $400 million? And he'll still jump off buildings and shatter his stupid ankle because he wants to do some Mission Impossible thing, right? So that's he's beyond positive and negative stimuli, which is why you want to try and be around the most successful people who are doing what they want out of passion, right? And the application of positive and negative stimuli is foundational to, you know, the whole question of deplatforming and what goes on in the world, right? Oh, if you talk about this topic, you know, you're going to lose your platform. You're going to lose your payments. You're going to do whatever, right? You lose your payment processing. So that's ostracism, just positive and negative stimuli. I'm sorry?
I said ostracism as well as a negative stimuli.
Ostracism is, yeah, ostracism is certainly part of it. Ostracism is different from deplatforming, though. Ostracism is, I'm not going to interact with you. Deplatforming is, I'm going to make sure no one interacts with you or, you know, the essential people and so on. That's a it's a different matter of thing, right? So breaking up with a girlfriend is saying, I don't want to date you anymore, but deplatforming is more like, and I'm going to get you fired, and I'm going to spread lies about you that you have herpes, and I'm going to make sure no one ever dates you again, and I'm going to stalk your social media. Like, then it turns kind of psycho-stalker, right? That's different from just ostracism, which is, I don't want to, right? But organizing that other people won't interact with you is a different kind of stalkerish kind of thing.
Yeah, you're right.
So if you want to be treated with respect, then you have to be willing, sadly, I mean, it's just a fact, right? You have to be willing to apply positive and negative stimuli. And this is why bosses tend to get more respect, as you point out, because they can apply positive and negative stimuli. They can give people raises and they can fire people. It's positive and negative stimuli. Now, please understand, I have no issue with giving people raises if they do a good job, and I have no issue with firing people if they do a bad job. That's fine. But the best motivations are the thing itself, not the raise or the working to avoid getting fired, right? Do a good, otherwise people just do the bare minimum and you end up with this kind of weird Soviet economy or this Japanese zombie economy where nobody gets fired and nobody really gets any raises either. So in life as a whole, I think one of the reasons that you would have a difficulty going forward and getting work is you made some negative choices as a young man, right? And listen, I did too. Everybody has. You're not alone. And it's certainly nothing to be ashamed of, but we got to call it what it is. You not finishing high school was a bad decision. You say, oh, well, but I was so depressed. It was still avoidant. If somebody had, like when you were down, really down, if somebody had offered you $1 million to go to high school for the day, would you have gone?
Yes.
Okay, so you could do it.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
So it's just a matter of motivation. So all the people who say, well, I just can't work out. It's so boring. It's so this. It's like, okay, well, if somebody offered you $1 million, would you go work out for a day? Yes. So you can. Now, if somebody's dying of cancer and somebody says, I'll give you $1 million to be cancer free, can they do that?
No.
No, they cannot do that. That's beyond their choice. Somebody gets their arm bitten off by some Carcharodon carcharias, they can't be offered $1 million. They can't get their arm back, right?
Right.
So when you were in high school, you decided not to go. Now, the more you say to yourself, well, I just couldn't, and I was so depressed, and so that's bullshit. Because if somebody had offered you $1 million, you'd have gone, right?
Yeah, no, you're right, yeah.
So the million dollars is your motivation.
Yeah.
So just imagine somebody's offering you $1 million. Uh-huh. I mean, Jim Carrey, when he was younger, he wrote a $10 million check to himself saying, I'm going to make this in a movie one day. Now, of course, it's not magical. He's also very talented and good looking, nice head of hair and all that. So good for him. But there is that visualization aspect, right?
Right.
The moment you say to yourself, you can't, you're right, but there's no need to be. If you say to yourself, I cannot go to school. I can't. You said this earlier. I can't. They wanted to send me to summer school. I can't go to summer school. Bullshit. Of course you can go to summer school. Of course you could have finished high school.
Yeah, you're
because
right.
Because if somebody had offered you $1 million, you damn well would have done it. So don't try and hide among the people dying of cancer saying, I don't have any more free will than they do. Right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Somebody gets pushed out of a plane and you offer them $1 million not to fall, they can't take your money, right?
Yeah, it makes
so
me...
When you go back, and this is my concern, when you said, well, my regrets are lower now. No. Regrets are when you forgot the $1 million pile of free will that's accessible to you anytime you want it.
I was just about to say that, yeah.
So you go back and you say, well, I couldn't, and I was this, and I was so that, and I'm down, and depressed, and anxious, and I'm overwhelming, and blah, blah, blah. Listen, I'm not a tough guy this way. I totally sympathize. I really do. I mean, there have been times when I haven't wanted to get out of bed and do a show.
Wow.
So I get that, and I really say, I'm not like how, you know, that's bullshit, the feelings are real and they're important. But don't you dare lie to yourself and say you couldn't.
Yeah, you're right.
Because when you're on your deathbed and you look back and you're like gonna die, you know, next month, next week, next Tuesday, tomorrow morning, this morning, 1 hour, half an hour. I think we get a countdown in our minds for most people. So when you're fading out at the age of 90 or some sort of ghoul-enabled Jimmy Carter age, now
100.
All we got to do is die. Everything else is a choice. Would you sit there and say, well, I'm dying. The doctors can't save me. They're just making me comfortable. It's just I'm winding down. Tick is dying. Lungs are fading. Everything's falling apart. Everything's going dark. I'm never getting out of this bed again. Would you look back and say, well, there's just no way I could have gone to summer school?
No, I wouldn't.
No, there's no way you're getting out of your deathbed, but there's a damn way you could have gone to summer school. With all the sympathy of your bad childhood, and this is the combo, right? Some people are too much sympathy, and then that turns into excuses, and some people are too much discipline without the sympathy. I bring both. I really sympathize with your childhood. It was wretched, awful, and horrible, it sounds like. But I cannot extend to you the no free will thing.
Yeah, you're right. The language
So when you said, well, I couldn't get people to respect me because my father wouldn't fire them. That's saying that you have no choice to get people to treat you with respect. And the only way you can get people to treat you with respect is to get your father to threaten them.
Yeah.
But that is bypassing the central fact that for most people, they will judge you how you judge yourself. And that is not a bad standard. I'm telling you. I mean, I wish everyone had the whole internal morality and integrity thing. I get that. But it's not a terrible standard to say that I'm going to judge you by how you judge yourself. So if you go into a job interview and, you know, you're standing up straight, you extend your arm, you give a firm handshake, you keep eye contact, right? What does that say?
It says I'm confident and I'm enthusiastic to be there.
Yeah, I'm confident. I know I provide value. If you ask questions back and say, tell me about the culture, I want to make sure it's a good fit. You know, tell me about the salary and have you checked to see if it's market competitive or whatever it is you're going to say in a job interview. You're saying, look, I'm looking for a good fit. I'm not desperate. I'm not starving. I'm not begging for a job. I'm looking for a good fit. Same thing happens in the dating market, right? I mean, I'm sure you've seen over the course of your life, we all have. You've seen some girl, you know, with the hunched shoulders staring down at her belly button, maybe some oddly colored hair, some giant freaky glasses, and just, you know, walking around like she's half bent over question mark clamshell stuff, right?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Now, you judge that woman as being very insecure, right?
I would, yeah.
Right. And you'd be right.
Yeah.
Because she is. On the other hand, if there's some guy who's, you know, some big swinging dick, half silverback jerkwad, who's like comes in and is so totally loud and flops down on the couch and spreads his legs and, you know, kicks over your drink and like, okay, that's a little hysterically over alpha a douchebag, right?
Yeah.
So that's too much confidence, right? So if you don't feel that you can encourage people to treat you with respect, then people generally will not treat you with respect.
Yeah, and I've felt, as I've gotten older and listened to the show in the beginning, it felt as if it was impossible. And then now it's just more like precarious, and I'm uncertain if people can treat me with respect. And that
it feels like a con job, right? Like everybody gets that fraud-itis, I used to call it in the business world, right? Like ran a whole software company and I'd never taken a computer science class, right? So I programmed all the software. I was self-taught, right? And and so on, right?
Oh, yeah.
And of course, I don't have a PhD in philosophy from Stanford or Harvard, right? Or anything sort of nonsense, right? So I get that, right? But here's the thing. Most people try to conserve as many resources as possible, right? Which is why you will order pizza rather than walk to go and get the pizza, right? Because you want to save all of those calories and all of that energy.
Right.
So here's the fact. The fact of the matter is that treating people with respect is more work than treating them with disrespect.
And why is that?
Because you have to negotiate.
Oh, yeah, more
if you
thinking.
Treat people with if you treat people with disrespect, just tell them what the hell to do and snap at them when they don't, and they'll just do it, right?
Yeah, scare them shitless and
just scare
do
them
what you
shitless,
want.
Intimidate them, bully them, and they'll just do what you want, and you don't have to expend all of this pissy energy with this back and forth negotiating bullshit, right?
Right.
It is energy efficient to be a bully.
Yeah, I see that now.
I sit around in my family, you know, especially over the holidays, and we're all like, well, what do you want to do? Well, I don't know. I've thought of this. Well, what do you want? Like, we're all negotiating, try and find the best thing for us to do. And, you know, we'll sometimes spend like half an hour trying to figure out what to do. And then we'll hit on something. Oh, yeah. And we all want to do it, right?
That sounds wonderful.
So if, it is, but it's time consuming, right? Whereas if I was just some, I don't know, a-hole patriarch, right? I'd just be like, okay, we're going to do this, right? And if we would line up, everyone, we're going to, right? I'm sure your dad was a little bit like that as well. So it's just very energy efficient to be authoritarian.
Yeah, my father
was this old saying about Mussolini, right? At least he made the trains run on time. I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
I wanted to mention with my father being authoritarian, he was kind of more like I would say kind of like the communists were, where it's like that soft core authoritarian were manipulative and as well as antagonistic. And that was something that took me a while to really understand how bad my childhood was, because it was a lot of gaslighting and manipulation. And then because my father had a reputation to maintain with his restaurant, it's like I felt this really hard pressure. It's like, do not fuck his reputation, because that not only, like, my father was the breadwinner, so it's like that would just screw me over, but also like financially as a kid. It's just I did not want to upset my father and, you know, so to speak, rock the boat. It was very like, it was a very tense, especially when I was younger, it was very tense. And then, you know, as I got older and my father could exploit me for, you know, for work at the restaurant, it changed and such.
Right. So, I mean, when it comes to, say, deplatforming me, is it easier for people to call me a bigot and a racist or whatever, and then just get me shut down? Or is it easier for them to study all of the history, philosophy, biology, to interview, like I interviewed 17 subject matter experts in the field of human intelligence and variances and so on, right? Is it easier to just call me names in terms of energy, or is it easier to debate me and prove me wrong?
It's easier to call you names.
Sure, sure. So it's energy efficient, right?
Right.
If you want to shut me up, you can either find ways to prove me wrong and then wreck my reputation because I'm an idiot who doesn't know what he's talking about, or you can just call me names, get me deplatformed, and it's way more energy efficient.
Yeah, lying is energy efficient as well.
Right. I mean, this is why in the animal kingdom, frankly, there's a lot of rape. Because it's in the animal kingdom, not that it's rape, because, you know, it's just, but it's not necessarily the most consensual. I think dolphins are quite non-consensual in their sexual activity. And, yeah, you know, tragically, and obviously it's evil for human beings, but in the animal kingdom, it's whatever, right? It's not as complicated as wooing, so to speak, right?
Right.
So, but recognizing self and other and negotiating to mutual benefit, you know, is it easier to sit down with a bunch of your workers and negotiate a good contract, or is it easier from a sort of energy standpoint in the short run to just have slaves that you beat if they don't do exactly what you want?
Right.
So when you're saying treat me with respect, you're saying to people, I want you to expend a lot more energy in your relationship with me.
Right.
Now, people basically, because they don't have a lot of internalized ethics, they say, wait, why should I?
Yeah, yeah, and they judge me, yeah.
Well, right. Instead of saying somebody's just driving to work, right, takes them half an hour to drive to work, you're saying to them, oh, you should come and pick me up, even though it's 15 minutes out of your way. And then instead of half an hour, it's an hour, right? 15 minutes to get me, 15 minutes to get back, half an hour to drive. And people saying, wait, you're asking me to expend more energy on your behalf?
Yeah.
But it's the same thing with asking for respect. You're asking people to expend more energy on your behalf.
Right.
And the question is why? Why should people expend more energy on your behalf by treating you with respect? Now, again, I understand the internal ethics and motivations and virtues, blah, 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 but that's not where the world is, right?
Right.
So, how do you get people to want to expend more energy on your behalf, and it feels like it's costing them energy, and it feels like it's benefiting you?
You provide something that benefits them.
Okay, and what's that?
I can't think of a principle, but I don't really have a good answer. What did you
it's
have?
It's not easy, right?
Yeah, it's definitely, it like depends on the situation. Like maybe you start sharing some camaraderie, so they feel like, oh, you know, they I'm on their side. There could also be monetary, like maybe what I start doing is inviting them to lunches if they're willing to pick me up, and I also pay for gas or something, you know.
Waiters, like with waiters, to use a restaurant scenario, Generally, the more expensive the restaurant, the better the waiters, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So in that case, the waiter is treating you with more respect, right? But you're paying the waiter more, right? you're buying respect, right? And movie stars get paid a lot because they will treat the audience with respect and do a really good job. They won't half-ass it for the most part, right? So, so you have to, for the most part, you have to bribe or threaten people into treating you with respect. I know it's sad, you know, and we're just talking about professional stuff, right? And your personal relationships is not what you want, right?
Right, right.
So in general, the way that I have done it is the principle I've talked about from the beginning. Treat people the very best you can the first time you meet them, and after that, treat them as they treat you. So I extend courtesy, dignity, respect, blah, 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 first time interacting with someone. If they then turn out to be, you know, kind of a manipulative jerk, then gloves are off.
Right, and then it's win-lose.
Well, then it's just like, okay, well, if you're not somebody who responds to being treated well, then you have outed yourself as a stimulus response person, and I'm not going to treat you any differently from that. I'm not going to have my internal system of ethics dictate how I do things, right? So I've mentioned this story before, so I'll keep it very brief. In one of the businesses I was hired into as an executive, I had my number two guy was really disrespectful.
Huh.
And, you know, like in front of the entire team, when I was questioning or opposing something, he said, he's like, yeah, really, you're really pissing me off, man. You know, just like, it's like, that's not how you talk to really anyone in business, right? I mean, if you've got an issue, you take it behind closed doors and work it out. And he was just difficult and becoming, I just knew this was going to be a conflict. So I went to my boss and said, I want to fire this guy. And he's like, no, he's been here for a long time. He's integral and so on. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, he made the QA girl cry. He's, you know, a QA woman cry, and he's really disrespectful and kind of hostile, and you can feel this, you know, and you feel that ugly temper in the room and so on, right?
Oh, yeah.
So my boss was like, give it a little bit of time, blah, blah, blah. So I gave it a bit more time, and then I asked again, and I said, look, if I'm the boss, I got to be able to fire the people, right? It's like, well, you know, we're more of a family here. I'm like, okay. So, but it wasn't someone who was going to respond to a virtue. So we were just in a meeting with the senior management, and this guy was there, and I just provoked him until he blew up. And then I didn't even have to fire him. My boss fired him, right? So, I mean, I'm just, you know, I would treat, if you're trapped in treating everyone like they're rational, you can't get anything done, because most people are not. Most people are stimulus response.
Yeah.
So treat people the best you can, and after that, treat them as they treat you. And sometimes, sometimes I've been 5 or 10 years between stimulus and response. Like, I remember this in the business world, like people who crossed me, you know, in a fairly small industry, which was the environmental software industry back then, in a fairly small industry, you keep running into the same people.
Right.
And if someone had screwed me, sooner or later, like, I was going to be in some position over them. I don't mean necessarily their boss, but it would be something to do with a customer or a client or a recommendation. Because if our software didn't meet a particular client's requirements, I would suggest someone else who did, right? Because you gain credibility that way, and it's being more objective, right? Even if it was a competitor who did something better than we did, I'd say, no, if you're really looking for this, these are your guys, not us, right? And so if somebody screwed me, I would just find ways to drop hints that this was not the most ethical business situation, this was not the most ethical business person. And I think I probably torpedoed at least 2 or 3 companies that way. And sometimes you just have to be patient and so on, right? But when you're with moral people, you deal with them in a moral manner. When you're with amoral people, you deal with them in an amoral manner.
And yeah, very
that's
true.
The most rational and productive thing to do. Like when you're with a when you're with a little kitty cat, you pet it. And when you're not with a little kitty cat and you're the big tiger, then you get inside the van, right?
Right.
So if you have that kind of permission, then you can be confident. But if you're trapped in, well, everyone has to treat me with dignity, and I have to treat everyone with dignity, and everyone has to respect me, and I have to respect everyone, you're trapped, and you can't actually achieve anything positive in this world, because that's not how most people operate.
That was my situation. You're spot on when it comes to that. And thank you for the example, too.
And then you just get hurt, and you get upset, and I understand that. I really do. But to me, listen, there's nothing wrong, you know, man to man, right? Let's bro it up for a second here. Let's sausage fest it, right? There's nothing wrong with a little old-fashioned combat, is there? have an enemy and fight your enemy.
No, I definitely agree nowadays. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, if it takes a while to get someone fired or it takes a while to get someone to lose credibility, take your time.
Yeah.
It's no rush. You know, revenge is a dish best served cold. And it's masculine and healthy to say, hey, treat me well, I'll treat you well. Treat me badly, gloves are off, let's roll.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we are still men who fought guerrillas. We are still men who fought other men. We are still men.
Yeah, the biology
draw swords in our history, and that's part of us. Now, we want to keep it civilized and peaceful and so on, but no, have your enemies and work for their downfall. And the funny thing is that when you have that air, you actually develop fewer enemies.
I can believe that, yeah. I can believe that.
Because people will be like, okay, he's got a bit of a hardness to him. He's got a bit of an edge to him.
Well, I would imagine the way you move and interact as well, just like non-verbally, just gives you that cue. It's like, oh, he's going to, if I mess with him, he's gonna get me back. Like, he doesn't,
and
so
you,
to
yeah,
speak,
you
fuck
get a
around.
Reputation. Yeah, you get a reputation over time. And you will find, so if all you do is cling to, and I hate to say cling to, that's really begging the question, but if all you do is overly attached to, well, everyone owes me respect, and if I don't get respect, I'm helpless. I have to run to dad, right? No, yeah. If people don't give you respect, if the people treat you badly, then, you know, you can try and reason with them, you can try, no, but if they're committed to treating you badly, then they're your enemies and you work for their downfall.
Yeah.
That's healthy.
I
would love it if
I
we
agree.
Could. I could love it if we could negotiate and reason with everyone. I mean, that's what I'm aiming for, but that's not the world we live in.
Agreed.
And if you have the confidence of knowing that your security and your strength is not dependent upon the goodwill of others, right? This is a terrifying line in a play, Streetcar Named Desire, where the crazy woman says, whoever you are, I have always relied on the kindness of strangers. It's like, well, you can't move through life relying on the kindness of strangers. You got to have some balls and biceps.
Yeah, especially as men.
I'm not saying you don't, right? But you got to have a little bit of that, a little bit of that Conan spirit, a little bit of that glint-eyed devil in you. Because if you're just rolling through life, crossing your fingers that everyone treats you well, I mean, you're just going to get rolled.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you should watch, follow this woman. I think her name is Dr. Karen Mitchell on X. She does really great dives into, you know, the psychopaths, the sociopaths, the dark triad personalities and so on. And her estimates of their prevalence in the population as a whole is north of 10%.
Oh, wow.
So you're just going to run into these people, and they're more on the edges and more in the extreme cases and so on, right? But if you are sailing through life, crossing your fingers that you're going to be meeting only moral people, then it's going to be very hard for you to gain any security or stability.
Yeah. I agree.
So if you say, listen, I definitely want to. And it's all just about giving yourself permission. Giving yourself permission to have enemies is fine. That's life. There's good and evil people in the world. There's good and bad people. There's right and wrong people. And giving yourself permission to have enemies and to not feel bad if you work against them, and of course, obviously, I'm not talking about anything that violates the non-aggression principle or fraud or anything like that.
Right.
But I mean, the guy I got fired, and this happened on more than one occasion. This is the one that's just the most vivid. But yeah, the guy I got fired, I mean, he literally put me down as a reference. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, really?
Couldn't believe it.
Oh, man. But I mean, to me, that's hilarious.
Well, and but if you're like, well, you know, you either get overly angry, right? Yeah. Or you just overly of a pushover. But yeah, that guy, it put me down as a reference. I was like amazed. I'm like, well, you know, he may get a job, but it sure as hell won't be because of me.
Mad respect for that.
Yeah. Well, and it's just self-respect though, right? I mean, I gave him every opportunity to be reasonable and so on. And if people choose that path, it's like, hey, man, I mean, I wish you didn't, but you did. And now we're enemies, and you got to give yourself permission to be a hard ass.
Yeah.
It doesn't do virtue any service at all to just wander through the world like everyone's already virtuous, because they're not. We become virtuous for the same reason that doctors become doctors, is because there are sick people in the world. And there are evil people in the world. And I tell you this, man, sure as shit, they're working for your downfall.
Yeah, no, I know that intimately. Like, the example just escaped me, sorry.
Well, no, I'm sure we can all think back on this. But yeah, give yourself permission to have enemies. Give yourself permission to tell the truth. And give yourself permission to work for the downfall of people who are corrupt or immoral. And do it smart and be careful, obviously.
Yeah.
And you'll find very quickly that people will sense that about you and treat you a whole lot better.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it helps a lot because, well, for me, like in the past, I was convinced that I was convinced by others that I overreacted. Now that I look back on it, it wasn't an overreaction. It's just they didn't like it that I was establishing boundaries and I was serious about it. And
remember, people used to fight duels at dawn.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, in the past, if someone pissed you off, you'd slap their face with a glove and it would be pistols at dawn and one of you would get fucking shot.
Oh, that, yeah, I get what you mean now. Yeah, yeah.
Of course, I'm not recommending that or endorsing that as a solution, but what I am saying is that for males, having enemies in particular and working for their downfall is healthy. If you're virtuous, it's good for the world too.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean you'll win every time? No. I mean, I'd be the last guy to say that. But you win in terms of your conscience, right? I mean, yeah. Have I won against anyone? Have I won against everyone who's ever crossed me and put me down? No, of course not. Because, you know, you can't win every time. But I have sort of emerged into a life that is joyful and full of love and great friendships and great relationships. And I mean, I've won in a pretty existential way, I would say.
Yeah, and to add...
But like, that doesn't mean that you win every battle. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, apologies. Winning at all costs is also, I realize it's a bad idea, especially when I was an adult. Like, you know, there are kind of limitations, you know, like for example, the non-aggression principle, that's a limitation, but it's better to do that than not.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm talking about honorable ways of having enemies and just, you know, telling the truth. I mean, with people I fired, I never lied about why I fired them, but I never sugarcoated it either.
Right.
Just tell the truth. And it's okay. It's okay and healthy to be pissed off at people. It's okay and healthy to apply, you know, peaceful, benevolent, negative stimuli, like bad references if somebody wants a job.
Oh, yeah.
I had a guy who asked me to get him an interview, and it was an acquaintance, and I'm like, yeah, it seems like a nice enough guy, so I got him an interview for a job, and he didn't show up.
Oh no!
And that's bad for me, because it looks like I'm no judge of character, and I wasted the manager's time for him setting up an interview, and you know what happens to the next guy I recommend to that manager? Like, it's just bad all around, right? Now, I get it; shit happens in life, you know, but. You know, the guy didn't call up. He's like, oh, yeah, I guess I just forgot. You know, one of these like non explanations that just is like, okay. So then, you know, the guy's like, you know, hey man, but if you could set me up again, I'd be like, nope. No, not doing
yes.
it.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm like, he wasn't an enemy or anything like that, but it's like negative consequences. If I set you up for an interview, you move heaven and earth to get there. And if you don't, I'm never doing it again.
Right.
And that's healthy because the guy shouldn't get all these. I mean, if it was some 17-year-old kid, maybe or whatever, right? But this guy was in his late 20s or whatever, right?
Yeah, I can
see. So, yeah. It's okay to have standards. It's okay to spit a little piss and vinegar. It's okay to have a little fire in the belly, and it's okay to have people you dislike and to either work against them or to fail to support them. And that's perfectly fine. It's perfectly healthy. And you'll find, if you apply that in general, that you'll be treated a whole lot better in the long run, because you are aligned with reality. And the reality is, if you're a baby zebra, you don't assume that every weird smell and moving piece of grass is just some buffalo crap and some wind. No, sometimes it's a lion.
Right.
And you gotta adjust yourself.
Yeah.
Accordingly.
Thank you, Steph. You really made it clear also, at least in my mind, how, you know, what we just talked about was very difficult for me because, you know, the people that that were like bad and I disliked the most were, you know, my parents. And being a child, I mean, that's really tough to navigate, especially.
It is. And, you know, massive sympathies. Like if you weren't taught Japanese, learning Japanese is really hard. And I really sympathize with that. And look, you're a great young man and obviously very intelligent. I really appreciate that you listen to the show and that you are, you know, the first caller in the new year and the 20th year of the show. So I massive respect and massive sympathies to you. And, you know, you did a great job over the course of the convo. And I really do appreciate that as well.
Thank you, Steph. And to many more years.
All right, man. Thank you so much. Now I have, believe it or not, a social engagement, which I am going to get myself ready for. Really do appreciate everyone for listening to the show. freedomain.com/donate to help out would be hugely appreciated. Thank you, everyone, so much. Lots of love from up here, my friends. We will talk soon.